Srila Prabhupada's translation on purport, Sri Chuta Goswami said, "O God, although we are born in a mixed caste, we are still promoted in birthright simply by serving and following the great who are advanced in knowledge. Even by conversing with such great souls, one can without delay clean up all these qualifications resulting from lower births." We could apply this in our relation to Srila Prabhupada and his servants. We are born in unfortunate conditions, most of us, meaning in terms of immaterialistic environments and families. And by the association, by serving Srila Prabhupada and his servants, we're able to become elevated. Purport. Sutta Goswami did not take his birth in a Brahmana family. He was born in a family of mixed caste or an uncultured low family. But because of higher association like Sri Shukadeva Goswami and the great rishis of Naimisharanya, certainly the disqualification of inferior birth was washed off. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed this principle in pursuance of the Vedic usages. And by his transcendental association, he elevated many low-born, or those disqualified by birth or action, to the status of devotional service, and established them in the position of acharyas or authorities. He clearly stated that any man, whatever he may be, whether a brahmana or shudra by birth, or a householder or mendicant in the order of society, if he is conversant with the science of Krishna, he can be accepted as an acharya or guru, a spiritual master. Sutta Goswami learned the science of Krishna from great rishis and authorities like Shukadeva, Vyasadev, etc. And he was so qualified that even the sages of Naimisharanya eagerly wanted to hear from him the science of Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he had the double association of great souls by hearing and preaching. Transcendental science, or the science of Krishna, has to be learned from the authorities. And when one preaches the science, he becomes still more qualified. So Sutta Goswami had both the advantages and thus undoubtedly he was completely freed from all these qualifications of low birth and mental agonies. This verse definitely proves that neither Sri Shukadeva Goswami refused to teach Sutta Goswami about the transcendental science, nor the sages of the Naimisharanya refused to hear lessons from him because of his inferior birth. This means that thousands of years ago, there was no bar in learning or preaching the transcendental science because of inferior birth. The rigidity of the so-called caste system in Hindu society became prominent within only 100 years or so, when the number of Dvija Bandhus, or disqualified men in the families of higher castes increased. Lord Sri Chaitanya revived the original Vedic system, and he elevated Thakur Haridas to the position of Namacharya, or the authority in the preaching of the glories of the holy name of the Lord. Although His Holiness Srila Haridas Thakur was pleased to appear in a family of Mohammedans, which from the Hindu point of view, because of eating meat, will be considered an inferior birth due to the connection to such habits. But the Lord Chaitanya didn't take that seriously, because Haridas Thakur changed, he didn't follow the family tradition in terms of the bad habits, but he took only the good habits from the family, and then by the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by surrendering unto him, he became a great acharya for eternity in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Such is the power of pure devotees of the Lord. The Ganges water is accepted as pure, and one can become purified after taking a bath in the waters of the Ganges. But as far as the great devotees of the Lord are concerned, they can purify a degraded soul even by being seen by the low-born. And what to speak of association? Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to purify the whole atmosphere of the polluted world by sending qualified preachers all over the world, and it remains with the Indians to take up this task scientifically and thus to do the best kind of humanitarian work. Prabhupada is paraphrasing the quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manushya Jammajar Chanma Sartaka Kori Karapara Upakar, that those born in India have the responsibility to spread the Krishna consciousness movement for the benefit of the whole world. But we shouldn't think that this is only for the Indians, but it is actually for anyone who has received this great gift of the process of devotional service. And actually, Srila Prabhupada, in some of his early letters, wrote to some of his disciples that in previous lifetimes, they were Indians, and now they have taken birth in the West in order to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement. So many of us may have been Indians in previous lifetimes, and therefore the same message applies to us. We have been born in the West, and we have become attracted to the Krishna consciousness movement, according to Srila Prabhupada, in order to contribute to propagate the message to the Westerners, because we can relate better to the Western ways of doing things, and then we can create a bridge between the Krishna conscious culture and the Kali Yuga culture. We are born in it, so we have a feeling for it. At the same time, we don't like the materialistic values, so we can create a bridge. We can take the best from that culture, use it in Krishna service, and then bring Krishna consciousness into the Western culture and establish a Krishna conscious society all over the world. The mental diseases of the present generation are more acute than bodily diseases. It is quite fit, and proper to take up the preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world without delay. Mahatamanam Abhidhana also means dictionary of great devotees, or a book full of the words of great devotees. Such a dictionary of the words of great devotees and that of the Lord are in the Vedas and allied literatures, specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we will read now other translations and then we will discuss further. And what to speak of those who are under the direction of the great devotees, chanting the holy name of the unlimited, who has unlimited. And what to speak of those who are under the direction of great devotees, chanting the holy name of the unlimited, who has unlimited potency? The personality of Godhead, unlimited in potency and transcendental by attributes, is called the Ananta, unlimited. It is now ascertained that he, the personality of Godhead, is unlimited and there is none equal to him. Consequently, no one can speak of him adequately. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of the goddess of fortune even by prayers. But this very goddess renders service unto the Lord, although he is unwilling to have such service. So Srila Sutta Goswami is speaking in answering the request of the sages of Naimisharanya to continue narrating the glories of the Lord and his pure devotees, specifically Maharaj Parikshit. And Sutta Goswami is expressing his disqualification to properly glorify the Lord and saying that if he is able to speak, it's due to the mercy he has received by pure devotees. But no matter how good a person is able to speak, always will be insufficient to do justice to the glorification of the Lord. And yet, the Lord is so merciful that he accepts the glorification of any devotee according to the capacity that devotee is able to offer. Sutta Goswami continues, who can be worthy of the name of the Supreme Lord but the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna? Brahmaji collected the water emanating from the nails of his feet in order to award it to Lord Shiva as a worshipful welcome. This very water, the Ganges, is purifying the whole universe, including Lord Shiva. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which non-violence and renunciation are consequential. All rishis who are as powerfully pure as the sun, I shall try to describe to you the transcendental pastimes of Vishnu as far as my knowledge is concerned. I know Sutta Goswami gives a very beautiful analogy. As the birds fly in the sky as far as their capacity allows, so do the learned devotees describe the Lord as far as their realization allows. So we may be big birds or small birds. but whatever we are, we can fly. So we can be very knowledgeable, having big realizations or having small realizations. It doesn't matter, as long as we use those realizations to glorify the Lord and to share Krishna consciousness with other people, with other souls, with devotees, both devotees and non-devotees. And now Sutta Goswami starts to narrating, answering the question of the sages to speak more about Maharaj Parikshit, what happened to Maharaj Parikshit, how was he cursed. And the rest of the chapter is the narrative of how Maharaj Parikshit was lost in the forest in one occasion and entered the ashram of Shamika Rishi in a very hungry and thirsty state of body and mind. And he was very eager to receive some water. Like a person, you can imagine when somebody is lost in the desert, for example, and if somebody is very thirsty, will ask for, give me water, like in a very difficult state of physical balance. And therefore that affected, by Krishna's arrangement, Srila Prabhupada explains, affected his state of mind, and he behaved in a way which normally he would have not done. The way we will hear how he behaved was unprecedented. But due to the will of the Lord, he acted in a somewhat incivilized way towards the sage, who didn't welcome him because the sage was in trance. He was practicing meditation. Recently in Spain, we had a yoga retreat with different yoga groups. We built a tent. We presented Bhakti Yoga, and the different groups presented their experiences, and everyone participated in kirtan and taking prasad. It was a very, very nice gathering. And those who practiced the classical yoga of concentrating the mind did some asanas and then dharana, first breathing, pranayama, then pratyahara, looking inside, then dharana, concentration of the mind, and then meditation. One of the yogis was teaching how to focus on this agya chakra. Like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the same, in order to be able to concentrate. So the sage, Shamika Rishi, was so concentrated that he didn't notice what was happening around him. He didn't notice that Parikshit Maharaj entered, even though he tried to show his presence by his energy and by moving a little bit. When you enter somewhere and nobody is taking care of you, like sometimes we go to a hotel, and isn't it? Then ring the bell because there is nobody in the reception. So Maharaj Parikshit wanted to call the attention of the sage. But the sage was so absorbed to the point that he was not even at the stage of deep sleep or deep concentration. There is a state of wakefulness, the state of sleep. Prabhupada sometimes will say, some yogis, they, in Kali Yuga, it's better to chant Hare Krishna because we practice meditation and many times we sleep soundly. So he was not sleeping, and he was not even at the level of deep sleep where there is no dreaming and there is deep concentration, but he went beyond the three stages of ordinary consciousness to the point where he was in a kind of samadhi, whatever the type of samadhi it was. Patanjali's Yoga Sutras describe two types of samadhi, Sabija Samadhi and Nirbija Samadhi, which means one is not the final samadhi, but one is one level of deep absorption in meditation, which may still have some seed of connection to the material self, even if very subtle. Even advanced yogis may have some sense of personal identity or self-consciousness, meaning material consciousness, because Srila Prabhupada explains, quoting Patanjali Muni's last sutra of the Yoga Sutras, that when one reaches such level of absorption, complete samadhi, attains chit shakti. Chit shakti means the energy of the consciousness. And then real life, real spiritual life begins at that point. So the sage was situated in such a state of consciousness, beyond the three ordinary stages of existence we normally experience. And therefore he didn't notice the presence of Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj thought somehow, due to his need, he had a very, very intense need for water, intense need for attention, for help. And the person who was there in front of him and could give the help was not even welcoming him according to the culture manners of the Vedic tradition, which even dictates that even an enemy should be welcome. Even if an enemy comes, some good words should be offered, some water and a sitting place, so that the person, Prabhupada says, doesn't feel that is has anything to fear. Srila Prabhupada quotes the example of Jarasandha and Bhima fighting. They fought for many days during the day, and at night they will get together and take dinner and drink and have some relaxed talks, maybe cracking some jokes. So they were having. It's very difficult for us to conceive, isn't it? With when somebody becomes an enemy to us, we tend to avoid that person. And according to the Bhagavatam, according to the Madhyamadikari platform, that will be legitimate to do, keep a healthy distance from somebody who is envious or inimical. But still, the ancient culture dictated that enemies should be welcome, because a Vaishnava should forgive. The Vedic culture, when we talk about Vedic, of course, the term Vedic is used by Srila Prabhupada in many different ways, and we won't get here into the details, but when we say Vedic in terms, in general terms, as meaning knowledgeable way of acting according to Shastra, according to scripture, Vedic culture is based on Brahminical culture. Brahminical culture means a spiritual foundation, spiritual practice. And Brahminical culture, the jewel of the Brahmanas is the ability to forgive. Somebody does something harmful to us, or apparently harmful, and be able to don't take offense, to forgive, and to extend our best wishes to the perpetrator or to the aggressor. It is something very difficult to do. It is also in the Abrahamic traditions, particularly in Christianity, when Jesus talks about like showing, I don't know in English, I know in Spanish, sorry. Yes, the cheek, the showing the other cheek when we have been beaten in one cheek. And if somebody is asking us to accompany him for 1 mile, accompany the person for 2 miles. So give the person double of what he or she is asking to us. This is the culture of service that we find in Vedic scriptures. The purpose of the Vedas is not ritual. The purpose of the Vedas is divine service. Krishna says, Vedaischa sarvaira hameva vetya. Through the Vedas I am to be known, and we are meant to see Krishna within the heart of everyone. Pandita samadarshina. Not only human beings, but also animals, plants, and the inanimate elements of creation. Krishna is present in everyone and in everything, and he's sustaining creation, Krishna says, as pearls strung within through a thread. He is the invisible person, substance, who keeps everything together. Nothing could exist without Krishna's divine presence and mercy, generosity. He is giving us our very life. We can exist due to Krishna's mercy. We can experience bliss due to his mercy. We can experience also challenges due to his mercy, so that we wake up to our blissful state of consciousness. We forget our divine existence, and Krishna comes and very mercifully creates situations that will help us to wake up. And he creates situations not only for us, sino even for his pure devotees, in this case, Maharaj Parikshit, to use Parikshit Maharaj as an instrument so that we can receive his transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It was due to the mercy of Krishna through Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj that we are able to listen to the message of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says, had Parikshit Maharaj not been into some kind of illusion, that he acted in an incivilized way towards the sage, remind you of the narrative, what happened of that Leela. After Parikshit Maharaj felt not received, he became angry. Sometimes in emotional intelligence courses, we have learned that there are three main emotions which can be subdivided into many other emotions. And one of the emotions is anger, one of the primary emotions. And many times the emotion we are experiencing, actually, the only thing that the emotion is doing is indicating a need we have. We have an unfulfilled need, and therefore we feel an emotion, a strong emotion. And that emotion can be anger, for example, if it is unfulfilled. If it is fulfilled, then we will feel happiness or gratefulness, etc. When we feel unfulfilled, we may feel sadness, anger. What's the third one? I forgot the third one. Experts say there is a third one. Fear. Yes, thank you. Or fear. So, and then there are many emotions which are connected to these three. So in the case of Parikshit Maharaj, he felt anger. because he was very thirsty. He really needed to survive. He needed water. And he thought, by Krishna's influence, he thought, this fellow is pretending to be in trance. And even though I'm making my presence notice, he's not blinking an eye. He's just with his eyes closed. He doesn't want to receive me. He's ignoring me. So Parikshit Maharaj decided to leave, upset. He was leaving, and then when he was leaving, he saw there was a dead snake. And Prabhupada says he then did for that. That's a, you know that expression? Did for that. He said, you don't receive me, so here you have it. So he took the garland. This is the welcome, the present I'm bringing you. And then gave him the dead snake as garland, which the sage, because he was in real trance, didn't notice, didn't move. Srila Prabhupada writes that as soon as Parikshit Maharaj left, he started to consider, to actually to regret what he had done. He thought, I have acted in a very uncivilized way. This is very bad. And he was considering, maybe he was actually in trance. I thought he didn't want to receive me. But maybe he was really in trance. And I should have just go elsewhere or wait until he was ready or search for my need in some other place. Then after that, when the child, the son of the Brahmana, Sringi, heard of what had happened, some of his playmates, people in the village, in the Brahminical village, told him what had happened, he became very angry, very upset. And he decided to do justice and saying, because Krishna even made the statement that Krishna is not present anymore in the age of Kali. He has left the planet, and now I will do justice to establish the principles of religion, because Krishna has left. So he was thinking he was doing good as a Brahmana, cursing Maharaj Parikshit to death. So he decided to curse him to death. In 7 days, he will be bitten by a snake bird. Someone told me that actually still in Africa there are some type of snakes which fly. Yeah, they do that. They jump in a way, and they have like this sight of the... Somehow they are able to push themselves. So it is not something we can say we have not seen, but still they exist in some places in the planet. So this flying snake will bite, according to Sringi, the immature Brahmana child, will bite to death the descendant, and he considered him the lowest, a very low-class person who got degraded. Atmavan manyate jagat. The thief thinks that everyone else is a thief. So Sringi, he had fallen from his position as a leader of society, and he thought that Parikshit Maharaj had fallen from his position because he was like that. And this is something to reflect on. Many times we see wrong in others. It may be good to look at ourselves. What are we seeing in others? What are we seeing in others may be very well be what we have within our hearts. Regardless of if it is an objective fact that that person has that condition or not. People act as our mirrors, and then we act also as mirrors of other people. Srila Prabhupada also said that devotee association is, devotees are like mirrors. And we can see ourselves by associating with devotees. Because devotees, they have Krishna within their hearts, then we can see Krishna also in that, in the mirror of their hearts. And we can see our, what we need to do to come closer to Krishna, what we need to purify, and we can also see our realizations in Krishna consciousness and get enthused by them, by the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. So now we will read the verses as explained by Sutta Goswami. This is text 24 and starts in a very traditional storytelling manner. Once upon a time, Ekada. Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. For us as devotees, if we are doing puja and there is nobody else in the temple or at home, and a guest comes, etiquette dictates that we should stop worshipping the Lord, welcome the guest, and then continue our puja. So Maharaj Parikshit also thought the sage should have received him because that's the etiquette. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities. And he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness, having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. The sage in meditation was covered by the skin of a stag and elongated compressed hair was scattered all over him. The king, whose palate was dry from thirst, asked him for water. The king, not received by any formal welcome by means of being offered a seat, place, water, and sweet addresses, considered himself neglected, and so thinking, he became angry. O Brahmanas, the king's anger and envy directed toward the Brahmana sage were unprecedented, being that circumstances had made him hungry and thirsty. In one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada compares Parikshit Maharaj to Arjuna. As Arjuna became bewildered so that Krishna will speak Bhagavad Gita, Maharaj Parikshit became bewildered in both cases by Krishna's desire so that Shukadeva Goswami, in this case, will speak Srimad Bhagavatam. While leaving, the king, being so insulted, picked up a lifeless snake with his bow and angrily placed it on the shoulder of the sage. Then he returned to his palace. Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had been actually in meditation with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had just been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya. The sage had a son who was very powerful, being a Brahmana's son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there, the boy spoke as follows. Oh, just look at the sins of the rulers who, like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetrate sins against their masters, contrary to the principles governing servants. So Sringi was saying, the Kshatriyas are subordinate to Brahmanas, therefore he should not demand anything. Even if the master doesn't give, he should accept it because he's the servant and the servant should wait. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? After the departure of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead and supreme ruler of everyone, these upstarts have flourished, our protector being gone. Therefore, I myself shall take up this matter and punish them. Just witness my power. Please pay attention to what were the mistakes of Sringi. We're looking now at the mistakes of leaders, and we can reflect upon how this could apply to our own situation, whether personal or communal, as a spiritual community. The son of the Rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Kaushika while speaking to his playmates and discharged the following thunderbolt of words. The Brahmana's son cursed the king thus, "On the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite the most wretched one of that dynasty." Maharaj Parikshit, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. Thereafter, when the boy returned to the hermitage, he saw a snake on his father's shoulder. And out of his grief, he cried very loudly. O Brahmanas, the Rishi who was born in the family of Angira Muni, hearing his son crying, gradually opened his eyes and saw the dead snake around his neck. He threw the dead snake aside and asked his son why he was crying, whether anyone had done him harm. On hearing this, the son explained to him what happened. The father heard from his son that the king had been cursed, although he should never have been condemned, for he was the best amongst all human beings. The Rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary, began to repent, saying, "Alas, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. He has awarded heavy punishment for an insignificant offense." So it was totally disproportionate, the punishment. "Oh my boy, your intelligence is immature, and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, who is the best amongst human beings, is as good as the personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is never to be placed on an equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. My dear boy, the Lord who carries the wheel of a chariot is represented by the monarchical regime. And when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves, who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lamps. Due to the termination of the monarchical regimes and the plundering of the people's wealth by rogues and thieves, there will be great social disruptions. People will be killed and injured, and animals and women will be stolen. There is a recent case of some young girls who were kidnapped, three, in the U.S. for 10 years. So this is happening. It's a prediction, which didn't happen. It was not common in those times. Although we read some cases in scriptures, like some of the demons, like Narakasura, Paumasura, he also kidnapped the princesses. So it happened by some demons in the past, but in the age of Kali is something which happens much more than we are aware of. Isn't it? The exploitation of women and children is something which there are many networks of these things in the world, and forcing women to prostitution and to and I read once the figures were very high. I couldn't believe it that it was, if these figures were accurate. I don't remember them by heart, but were very, very high. And for all these sins, we shall be responsible. At that time, the people in general will fall systematically from the path of a progressive civilization in respect to the qualitative engagements of the castes and the orders of society and the Vedic injunctions. Thus, they will be more attracted to economic development for sense gratification. And as a result, there will be an unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. The last verses. The Emperor Parikshit is a pious king. He is highly celebrated and is a first-class devotee of the personality of Godhead. He is a saint amongst royalty, and he has performed many horse sacrifices. When such a king is tired and fatigued, being stricken with hunger and thirst, he does not at all deserve to be cursed. So this is the mentality of a real Brahmana. The Brahmana is merciful, sees the good in others. Then the Rishi prayed to the all-pervading personality of Godhead to pardon his immature boy who had no intelligence and who committed the great sin of cursing a person who was completely free from all sins, who was subordinate and who deserved to be protected. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. The sage thus regretted the sin committed by his own son. He did not take the insult paid by the king very seriously. Generally, the transcendentalist, even though engaged by others in the dualities of the material world, are not distressed, nor do they take pleasure in worldly things, for they are transcendentally engaged. So we see Parikshit Maharaj are the example, and Shamika Rishi are the example of real leaders who don't take offense when they are personally attacked. or mistreated. And Sringi is the example of the fallen leader who doesn't follow the tradition of high values and only becomes attached to the externals, to the ritual, and the considerations of external position. We don't have time for going into an in-depth discussion. So what to do? Comments or questions?
It's also explained that a child is not held responsible for their actions. And it specifically mentioned Sringi was a boy. It doesn't say how old he was. It is mentioned as a boy at least once or twice, a few times. And also that he was, when he realized what happened, he cried, which also implies he was probably a man. So how is it, the king was overlooked because he was fatigued, but the boy who did the curse was taken.
There is a purport by Srila Prabhupada on this point.
The whole grammatical order because of boys. So there would seem to be some sense of forgiveness because he's a boy. It's like the king was forgiven because he was tired. So why is the boy forgiven because he was a boy?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada in one of the purports, in purport to text 48, writes something about that. Writes that Shamika knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. The Lord can only give direction to take shelter of the devotee only. He thought within himself that if Parikshit Maharaj would counter-curse the boy, he might be safe. But he knew also that a pure devotee is callous about worldly advantages or reverses. As such, the devotees are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, negligences, etc. This is in 48. And later on, Prabhupada writes, thus there was no other alternative than to place an appeal to the Lord for the immature boy. It is not that only the Brahmanas are powerful enough to award curses or blessings upon their subordinates. Somewhere else, there is another purport related, where Prabhupada says that the sage thought because he was a child, there were grounds to be forgiven. If he had been an adult, it would have been more difficult to get forgiveness from the Lord. You want to read it loudly?
So the question may be raised here that since it was the desire of the Lord that Parikshit Maharaj be put into that awkward position, so that he might be delivered from material existence, then why was a Brahmana's son made responsible for this offensive act? The answer is that the offensive act was performed by child only, so that he could be excused very easily, and thus the prayer of the father was accepted. But if the person is raised, why the Brahmana community as a whole was made responsible for allowing Kali into the world affairs? The answer is given in the Varaha Purana that the demons who acted inimically towards the personality of Godhead, but were not killed by the Lord, were allowed to take birth in the families of Brahmanas to take advantage of the age of Kali. The all-merciful Lord gave them a chance to have their births in the families of pious Brahmanas so that they could progress towards salvation. But the demons, instead of utilizing the good opportunity, misused the Brahminical culture due to being puffed up by the vanity in becoming Brahmanas. The typical example is the son of Shamaka Rishi, and all the foolish sons of the Brahmanas are warned hereby not to become as foolish as Sringi and be always on guard against the demoniac qualities which they had in their previous births. The foolish boy was, of course, excused by the Lord, but others who may not have a father like Shamaka Rishi will be put into great difficulty if they misuse the advantages obtained by birth in the Brahmana family.
Thank you. So that, is it clear, the answer? It's very clear. Eh? So actually the boy was used as a representative of the Dvija Bandhus, people born in Brahmana families, but who have no qualification as a Brahmanas. So he was used as an example, and because he was a child, he could be forgiven. And this was in synchronicity, you say, synchronous, with a curse that the demons had received in previous ages to take birth as Brahmanas in the age of Kali. Doesn't mean that everybody born in Brahmana families is a demon, but some may be, because there is a curse for that, and therefore we find many people born in religious families who do not behave religiously. And even though we are not born in Brahmana families, but we can also consider that this could very well apply to us also. If we become purified by the association of the pure devotee, it is not automatic that our children will become pure devotees. They have great chances, but we shouldn't take it for granted. So that's something to keep in mind. The mic, please.
They have the same problem now. If a child murders somebody, what do you do with them? Because there's been, in the last 100 years, there have been cases of children killing other children. And then what do you do with a child who's so, like, do you prosecute them or do you lock them up or how to deal? Sringi's offense wasn't just, he killed Parikshit. So it wasn't a small thing that Sringi did. If he took a gun and shot him in the head, it's the same thing. And it was very deliberate. It wasn't an accident. He very deliberately killed the king. So.
I think normally they take the children to places where they are supposed to reform them, isn't it, for children? They have, I don't know the name in English. In Spanish we say reformatorio, a place to reform them. What can you do? I mean, it's extreme. Any final comment or question? This is something. Okay.
Another example of how the Lord uses the Brahmin's curses is
that's how Krishna's family was taken off the earth, right? Gandhari cursed Krishna, and then later the Brahmanas cursed the sons of the dynasty, right? They were playing with them. Oh, sages, tell us who will this young girl give birth to, right? And he said, the death of your dynasty.
Yes. Oh, yes, in this case, it was quite extreme. Yes, very extreme. What they did. But it is proportionate. We had a class a few chapters ago. We had a section on Lord Krishna's disappearance, and we discussed how it was actually a plan by the Lord to take his associates at once to their respective places, whether his own abode or the heavenly planets, and to teach detachment. Because even if, this is what the acharyas say, even if in the family of the Lord such as extreme things happen, we cannot take anything for granted. We shouldn't just think, okay, we are Srila Prabhupada's family, we can't do anything and get away. We cannot. Sometimes we thought like that, and we may still a little bit think like that, but we cannot. whoever we are, we get what we deserve or what we need to learn, what we have to learn. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.